From RunAsRadio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell. This is Brandon Wen announcing show number 372, Security Recap with Paula Janishevitz, recorded Thursday, May 15th, 2014. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, providing professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com. You can follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/runasradio.
Thank you, Brandon. This is Richard Campbell, and thanks for listening to Run As Radio. I'm still here at TechEd in Houston, and I found myself a Paula J. Hey, Paula.
Hi, Richard.
You were like all of Channel 9 yesterday.
Well, that's true.
So what, did you do three different shows back to back? Did you just stay in the studio?
Yeah, well, I went up for a moment, but there were three shows. Okay. And the major one was about the defrag tools.
You did that with Rusinovich.
Rusinovich was just after me. So I was actually kind of hoping that we're going to sit next to each other, but no, not this time.
Okay. So the defrag tools for drives?
So the defrag tools, it's a show for people that are interested in Windows internals.
Oh, okay.
The show is driven by Larry Larson from Channel 9 and by Andrew Richards.
Yes.
And Andrew Richards is the debugging guy.
Yeah, yeah. He's a guy who can open up a dump and just go through it line
just
by
like
line.
Everything. Yeah. He does all the magic. Exactly. So he's hosting the show and I was a part of it, and which is really amazing because I'm watching the show.
Mm-hmm.
And once I got that request, Paula, you want to be on Channel 9 within the defrag tools? I'm like, really? I could not be better. Of course.
That's cool. What was the second one?
So the second one was even better, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was about what you can do to a computer. And Andrew Richards, after we finished the show, he looked at me in a really serious way and he said that he's like really scared right now. And this was dirty because I was getting into certain areas of operating systems.
You can do scary things to a computer. I've seen you do that.
Yeah, that's my job.
You know? No, you're good at it too. No, it's like, hey, here's all your administrator passwords. Enjoy.
Enjoy. And this is like nothing because we can do even more. Yes.
And was there one more? The one that I came in at the end.
This was at the beginning. So when you came at the end, this was the hacking show.
Oh, okay.
Pre, it was the defrag tools. And pre, it was the security discussion regarding the cloud. So it was like a small chat.
Mm-hmm.
And we were asked questions from guys that the guys could post questions on Twitter.
Okay.
And then we were supposed to answer those.
Nice.
That was cool.
That's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And you just came off of a session.
I did.
Were you showing your raccoon tool then?
Raccoon tool was on the different session.
Okay.
But it was kind of, what about the tool? Yeah. The tool is about removing the single entries from the EVTX file extension. So it's an event log.
What is the EVT format?
EVT format, it's actually...
Is it a binary format?
Well, it's not a binary format, but whenever what we were doing, we were editing it in a binary way.
Okay.
So we were open it in WinHex, and then we were like checking out all of the things, what this number is responsible for,
right.
What in this place, what about that number? It's really difficult to do anything with a format.
Okay.
But we did it.
So you've got a tool that will actually modify the event logs.
Yes, the tool isn't perfect yet.
Yeah.
Because there are still a couple of things that could be done better, but it does the job.
And this is not a good tool. This is an evil tool.
It's a very evil tool. That's why there is a raccoon icon in it. Yes.
Because raccoons are evil.
Yeah.
We all know.
Evil and cute at the same time. Depends in which scenario you use the tool. Yes.
They're very cute, but I can't think of any scenario where editing the event log is a good thing to do.
Not at all.
No.
There is no reason why administrators should do it.
So you're doing this to prove that EVTs have vulnerabilities?
Well, the reason why I'm doing it is to show that whenever technically someone gets into your computer,
right.
Then anything can happen.
Right.
And it's just like if someone is one step farther, and how far can we go?
Right.
So we can go very far. And if someone is one step farther, then what can you do? You need to be one step farther.
Sure.
Maybe you're going to be. Maybe someone's going to even go farther. Yes.
Yeah. So this subtle attacks that the guy could go in and make substantial changes to your machines and then remove all the log entries to show any proof that it actually happened and then slip away.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, this idea that you can leave no trace, you
exactly.
just sort of created a proof.
That was the goal. Okay. And you can also do it with a little bit simpler technique mm-hmm. because, for example, you can reboot the machine from the removable media.
Right.
And then during that time on the real machine, on the real operating system, there will be no logs.
Right.
Or, for example, store the EVTX file somewhere, do your job, and then overwrite it with the old one.
Right.
Yes. But this is kind of, you know, easy. So I decided to show something geeky.
So, yeah, where it's the real file with modifications.
Exactly. You don't have physical access to the computer.
Well, often when you see machines getting exploited, maybe the logs are erased, but you knew the logs were erased.
Yeah.
What I think is impressive about what you did there is you would never know that those entries
exactly.
have been removed.
You will never notice
There's
that.
There's no way to tell.
And I mean, the change date is all the time there because
right.
the logs are created. Yes.
Yes.
So it's just a pure evil.
And what's the defense against this kind of evil against your raccoon tool?
Yeah, the raccoon tool must be running as administrator.
Right.
Yes, because this
so
is
the
how
machine's got to be fully compromised.
Exactly. The machine needs to be fully compromised. This is the situation when someone is deleting the trace.
Right.
Yes. So to prevent the prevention is way, way earlier than that.
Yeah. If you allow people to get access to the machine, you're in big trouble.
Yes.
Isn't there a way to send the log off somewhere else, like at least make it harder to modify?
Definitely, and this is the solution. Yeah.
Right.
So whenever, for example, you would like to store the logs and still make sure that nobody is playing with the logs, mm-hmm. you can stream them out, subscribe to them,
right.
and centralize them somewhere, and then gather, for example, the logs on one or two servers.
Right.
But of course, that assumes that hacker did not manage to
exactly all the catch. Machines.
Yes, yes, yes.
Like if you got one admin password, do you have them all?
But let's say he did not. Yeah.
Right.
So that's going to be the something that will prevent
it makes
the
it a
information
little harder
loss.
Anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
And today's session?
Today's session was about the mandatory checklist for the hacker.
Okay.
And this was fun. It was supposed to be like that. It's supposed to be a pure fun.
Mm-hmm.
And I was showing the tiny malware architecture, and I was running a certain malware. And everything started from the script, the PowerShell script.
Right.
That administrator copied from the website.
Mm-hmm.
And he pasted it in the PowerShell. But the problem was that the onClick function from the website
right.
contained some additional lines. So, and you do not see it when you look at the script itself.
Sure.
And even if you read it, it's perfect. But underneath, within the view source, when you do the view source for the web page, there's an on-click malicious lines.
Okay, so the malicious code is hidden in the web page.
Hidden in the web page.
Calling to the script.
Exactly.
All right.
So when you select the script, copy it, on-click function copies also the script that is underneath, the
oh,
one that
no.
is hidden from the source of the web page. And then you just paste it in your PowerShell. You execute it because you just saw the script and it was okay.
Right. You read it, checked it, thought it was fine.
And then it adds a couple of additional things.
Oh, that's so sneaky.
I'll tell you more. So what it does, it downloads from the web page the WinLogon DLL.
Mm-hmm.
So this is the DLL that hooks into a logon UI process
right.
that is launched only if you elevate yourself or log on to the operating system.
Right.
So it's pretty hard to find it because when you elevate yourself or you log on, I mean, how can you search for something launching at that time?
Yeah.
Of course, you can establish the monitoring pre.
Yeah.
But that's going to be after you launch
the
malware.
You're already logged in, yeah.
Exactly. You log on. If, for example, you elevate yourself, you run the code as the elevated
right.
person.
Mm-hmm.
So the code is already there. And then you're like, maybe I was going to check for that.
Yeah.
So this is what I was talking about.
That's tricky.
Yeah.
So can you manipulate WinLogin ahead of time before you actually log in?
Yeah, that's what you can do. Yes.
Okay.
The logon UI is the process that services everything.
Right.
And this is the process that is only launched within certain situations.
Okay.
So the DLL, when you, for example, the malware,
mm-hmm.
when you, for example, do the malware monitoring, like on a live operating system.
Right.
It's not there.
So it's not going to trigger.
Yeah, no.
It's only when the elevation happens that
exactly.
it's actually going to load.
Yes.
And does the malware tester at that point detect it, or is it too fast?
Like, no. So what you can do, because what I use, it's a known launching mechanism.
Right.
You've got something that is called an LSA provider.
Yes.
And this is a known way to launch things.
Mm-hmm.
It's just really hard to find it. Yeah. So I haven't really discovered anything new rather than the pretty cool scenario
right.
and very probable scenario that everything started from the innocent listing services script that you got on a web page.
Right.
You copy it because it's cool. It even put the colors, like services that were not secured.
Right.
Running on the, not the building accounts, but the custom accounts and so on. Mm-hmm. They were colored. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's actually to help you, like really to help you. But underneath there is a tiny surprise.
There's an exploit going on.
Yes. There is a small evil raccoon living over
there. Is that almost a social engineering exercise now that malware looks like security software?
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
definitely.
It's part of the process now.
And that's what I said
yeah.
at the beginning. Like, a technology is cool, but it's so good right now that mm-hmm. whenever we are thinking about getting in, what you actually think about is how to trick users or someone
mm-hmm.
to do them something for you.
Right.
And it's not, it can be the personal social engineering
right.
or it can be like technology related social engineering,
sure.
but it's always relying on the people's doing too much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
More than they absolutely need to.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, we tend as administrators to think all administration, right? We have much higher privileges than we really need most of the time.
Yeah, yeah.
So getting this sort of reflex of when I go to do something, I do it with minimum privilege.
Yes, correct.
But I tend not to do that.
Definitely. And what I also leverage is the fact that administrators, they log on to the user's computers.
Yes.
And there is that one logon, one. Of the domain admin and
right.
the malware that I had spread it all around.
Wow.
Yes.
So taking advantage of the fact that the domain admin logs in with his administrative account and has way more privileges than he needs
yes.
to exploit and access all of those yep. machines.
Yeah. Of course you need access. I mean, it's no magic. Of course, something must happen to
yes.
elevate yourself, something.
But it comes back to taking advantage of this reflex behavior I have to use my administrator password when I don't need it.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
That's really interesting.
The normal work should be done on the domain user account.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, even if you will copy the script and paste it, then it's still evil can come because on-click function is going to be there.
Right.
But the question is who can run it, yes?
Yeah. And a low-privileged person just wouldn't do much because they just don't have the privileges to cause
yeah,
any trouble.
And come on, let's do not assume that the user is going to, in my scenario, run the PowerShell scripts,
right.
yes?
Well, you know, I think it's interesting to attack the administrators rather than attack the users because as an administrator, I'm always presuming the users are screwing things up.
Yeah, yeah.
Not recognizing that the good black hats now are going after me. Because
yeah.
I actually have bad habits too.
Exactly, exactly. And it was about habits. And at the end, I sum up the session that guys, within all TechEd, within the 4 days, you've been hearing a lot about administrators logging on to the workstations
mm-hmm.
and that brings problems. And you've heard a lot about past the hash situations, so all of that. And to be sincere, I hope that this is the last time you hear about it, that this TechEd will stop that habit.
Yes, just stop
so,
doing
and thank
it.
You so much.
Yeah.
So this was the summary.
In some ways, I feel like the Linux folks have always done this better, that you never log in with your administrator account. You
exactly.
always elevate.
Exactly. Exactly.
Right.
So there is this tiny annoying thing that you need to do, but it gets to your habit.
Yeah, it's not actually annoying. It's safe.
It's safe. I agree.
I only elevate myself at the moment that I really need to and no other time.
Yeah.
And that really limits the attack surface for the malware folks.
Yeah.
Are you seeing new malware out in the wild? Are they getting this clever? Because I know you're clever and thinking about the problem in a very advanced way. I just wonder if the bad guys are thinking that advanced too.
Well, the bad guys, they, in most cases, they're like the most popular malware. It's targeting users.
Right.
And it's, at the end, I mean, maybe it's really sad to summarize it like that, but it's all about money.
Right.
So all of the popular malware that we've got right now,
mm-hmm.
they actually ask for money. And interesting story that I've heard lately regarding the malware, and this
right.
is our developer who shared the story with me, that he saw recently a malware that encrypted your drive.
Right.
And the only way how you can get access to your data is to pay.
Right. It's an extortioning scheme. I've seen this scheme
you
in
did.
Action. Yeah.
Gotcha. So, I mean, this is nasty.
It's clever, though,
it's
isn't
clever.
It? It's non-destructive.
Exactly.
We just lock up your
just
stuff.
Just pay, and
you're
going
to
get the data back. Exactly.
Yeah.
Actually, I kind of like that. It's smart.
Yeah.
It's fair.
Well,
they're going to do actually something for you.
Yeah. They've done something to you in the first place.
Yeah.
You know, it's very much the old school, you know, criminal,
very.
You know, be ashamed if your house burned down
yeah,
kind of thing.
Yeah. And then you see it and you're like, really? Like, is this really? I mean, this was popular years ago.
Right.
But, I mean, it's still there.
Yeah. Still going on.
Yeah.
It's really interesting. Any thoughts on the whole Heartbleed incident, the OpenSSL exploit?
Ooh, this is an interesting question. Yeah, definitely. I talked to a person
mm-hmm.
from like a government level in the US.
Right.
And what he thinks about it. And he said a really interesting sentence.
Oh, yeah.
That he does not think that that was known by the three-letter N organization.
Yes. Yeah, it's almost too elegant to have been done intentionally.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, because you think, when I think about intentional, like, high-level exploits, I think about things like Stuxnet.
Like Stuxnet.
Incredibly sophisticated.
It just hits you in your eyes. Yes. Like, and Stuxnet is there. I mean,
and
it's
deeply complicated.
Yeah.
This was one missing line of code. It was too subtle.
Yeah.
To actually, I think, to be done intentionally. I think I believe that somebody was working on code late at night,
yeah,
who didn't follow their own best practices about review and check-in.
Correct.
And left a gaping hole.
Yes.
It's just a question. I mean, we have no way of knowing how long that's actually been exploited.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. But this person also said, mm-hmm, that he doesn't think that anybody else knew about it earlier than we in public.
Right.
So
until the actual the announcements around it and the fix for it, and I mean, it's only one line of code. It was very easy to fix.
Yes.
That being said, there's still thousands of sites out there using the broken code.
That's correct. That's correct. And I mean, I'm glad that it's over right now. But if you still run for a couple of pages, yes,
yeah,
it's still going on. And actually, I called our customers. How is it? How is it with them? Mm-hmm. And is it okay? And so on. And one guy said, "Yeah, yeah, yeah. We patched it. We patched it. We know. Yeah, thank you, Paula, for taking care about us. We did. We did." I'm like, "Uh-huh. Okay. Let me check."
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they did not. I'm like, "Are you sure that we are talking about the same IP address?"
Yeah.
And they're like, "Oh no. So we didn't. Oh no. So we have to work on it." And they did it very fast because it's easy to patch it.
Yes.
So it's good that people read the news. It was like a front page in the newspapers.
Yeah. And so they actually went and checked on it. I did a show a while back with Troy Hunt talking about this exploit as well.
He's a nice guy,
and
yeah,
one of the points he made was, you know, Windows folks aren't worried about it because they don't use OpenSSL. But do your firewalls use it? Does your SSL terminator use it?
Yeah, that kind of level.
And those, mm-hmm, things are tougher to patch too.
Yeah.
So now you've got, you know, if this is a piece of hardware, you can't just go install what you want on it. Now you have to go to the vendor and say, "Have
exactly.
you got a fix for
have
this?"
Have you got? Yes, but the vendors usually do.
You they would
do.
Hope.
Yeah, you would hope.
You would certainly
There's
hope.
Time that you were like kind of under pressure.
Yeah.
But people cope with that very fast. And yeah, like all the patches were issued immediately. Maybe for smaller providers, it took a time, but
yeah,
no, not really. It was people managed it well.
Yeah.
And I was really glad to see that.
I just don't know that Heartbleed's over yet. There's still always going to be some old sites still vulnerable for a long time.
Yes.
But certainly the big ones and anybody who cares
exactly
can deal with it.
And within the small websites, probably the information is not there. It might be even though small company.
Right.
If
it's a small company, you probably don't have that much information there that's vulnerable anyway.
If they read news, and that's what I will think about the reliable company,
right,
that they read news.
Yes.
I'm sure they saw it in a newspaper.
And then supposedly, once all of the sites we care about are patched, we're supposed to change all of our passwords.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Oh, boy.
Let's talk about passwords. I don't know if I'm sick of this subject or not, because it keeps coming around again and again. How do you manage your passwords? Do you use a product or a tool to keep your passwords moving?
KeePass.
You're a KeePass person.
Yes, I'm a KeePass person.
And it's on your phone, and it's on your machines.
It's not on my phone.
No?
Because I'm not logging on anywhere from my phone.
Okay.
Instead of my email, that's it.
Right.
Well, email and Facebook, that's it.
Right.
And regarding the computer, of course, yes, it's in the cloud as well. So just in case, when I'm in travels and I'm constantly in travels.
Right.
Is that nice to have something that is accessible from somewhere?
From anywhere.
Yes.
Now, what do you use in KeePass that makes it compelling? Like, are they generated passwords? You don't even know what
exactly,
they are?
Exactly. So I don't even remember those.
Okay.
It's a randomly generated password. And I mean, we all know the story of LinkedIn.
Right.
Right? A couple of years ago, people's passwords leaked.
Right.
And that kind of disturbed me.
Sure.
Because how can your password leak? Like, how?
Yeah.
Like,
why are their passwords
stored?
Yeah.
So I'm okay with leaking anything else. Well, I'm okay. This doesn't really sound good.
No.
I'm not okay at all. But if it's about
but this is something you should never have stored in the
first
place.
The bad and worse. Exactly. I would prefer actually the hash to be leaked.
Yeah.
Yes. But not the password.
Yeah, the password is. So it's just sort of a reminder that it doesn't matter that it's a big site. They have bad security practices.
Exactly.
And you're vulnerable because of it.
Exactly. So this is the first thing. Second thing, if you have a password that is different for all of the websites.
Yes.
That's great, because even if it leaks, then you got only problem exactly with one website.
And how frequently does KeePass help you change them routinely too?
Within the KeePass?
Yeah.
Yeah, you can change them, but as long as they are like randomly generated, and they are different for all of the websites.
It doesn't actually need to be changed.
Yes, you don't really change it very often. Yeah.
I guess what I'm looking for is the perfect tool, the one that'll just automatically change my passwords every 60 days. I never need to know them.
I know. What kind of tool is that?
Yeah.
Yours.
Mine.
It's your tool.
Yeah.
That you're going to write, right?
I'm going to have to write this tool myself. Oh, man. Yeah, so I got lots of time to be writing software.
If you're searching for the perfect tool, it's going to be yours.
You're going to have to build it yourself.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I'm really enjoying the change in security around two-factor authentication. I was recently given a couple of Bitcoins.
Okay.
Via Coinbase.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like about Coinbase is every time I log into Coinbase, they do a two-factor authentication. They text me a code that's just for the session.
Just for the session, yeah.
And so at the end of the session, that code's gone. If I open up the page again, I have to get a new token. And I really like that. It gives me a sense of confidence.
Yeah.
That we're going two-factor for the session, not just for the initial identity.
It's nice, but it's also, it costs money.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
not
to implement,
free.
Exactly. So to implement the system, companies need to know about it and they need to spend some money on it.
Right.
And sometimes it's just not necessary.
It's costing, well, and I think in the case of something like Coinbase, which is a digital bank.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. I think it's worth the extra mile. And because they're paying for every text message they send out.
Yes.
So it's not free for, in any respect. I think I'm paying back too.
Yeah,
that
correct.
That costs me to receive texts.
Yes.
But tell me if I'm wrong. I feel like we're getting smarter.
Yeah, definitely. So if it's about like judging the future,
mm-hmm.
like what we are right now against what we were.
Yes.
Yeah, I get the same impression. So people are a little bit more aware of what is going on. Yes. And, with one of the tiny social engineer tests that I did.
Yes.
There was a lady actually that she picked up the phone and she was in the need for calling the IT guys.
Right.
Because I was doing something related to IT.
Yeah.
To ask them, who am I? Good for her.
Yeah.
I mean, she was like, I'm disturbed. Who are you?
Right.
I'm like, you passed the test.
Yes.
Yes.
You're not just letting me do stuff.
Exactly.
You're actually
exactly.
asking the question. Authenticate.
Yeah. And it's not impolite.
No.
I mean, impolite is going to be when they're going to do something. It's going to be impolite. It's not impolite to ask, who are you? What you are doing?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm always doing this. Sometimes even when I'm at the customer site, you know, the tailing.
Yeah.
You think when somebody sticks to your back.
Yeah.
And when I got my badge somewhere within the customer site and there's someone trying to get to the
go
door.
Through
I'm like,
with
excuse
you.
Me, who are you? I was like, I'm working here. I'm like, okay.
Then you have a badge and you can
you
let yourself in.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm even doing that sometimes.
Yeah.
Like,
no,
just don't stick to my back.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're supposed to be in security. We're supposed to take this stuff seriously and deal with the social consequences in the process.
Definitely. And people are aware. And there is usually the security awareness training organized for people.
Right.
And they are showing, people are showing examples.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, we are definitely better.
I just wonder if the whole, if I leave a USB key in a parking lot, people will still plug it in thing will go away.
I think they will. I think. And if it's going to be like nice looking, then they're going to do it with more pleasure.
Right. Well, or you fill up the USB ports with epoxy resin, right?
Exactly.
Who would do that?
Well, on the website with the USB glue, they said it was a joke.
Right.
Yes, but I think it's going to sell. You know? I think it's a potential business going on over there.
Absolutely. Well, because it deals with a real issue, which
yes.
is, you know, you can't just stick USB keys willy-nilly. That being said, I mean, as administrators, we can lock down what keys go in and, you know, use for policy
properly.
Yeah,
but still, for example, last year I used something that is called Rubber Ducky. And Rubber Ducky, it's a USB key that has a keyboard inside, keyboard chipset.
Yeah.
It looks like a normal conference USB key.
Right.
And the funny thing about it is that it acts like a regular keyboard.
Right.
So it doesn't need any special driver and so on.
Mm-hmm.
It has also the data storage on it. So nothing really, that seems to be not normal.
Right.
And then you plug it in, and then whoever wanted to type whatever types it on your keyboard.
Right.
With that USB stick. So even though if you're going to say that these device IDs in a GPO are not allowed, what is cool about Rubber Ducky is that you can change the device ID.
Right.
So I am right now your HP keyboard.
Yes.
Sorry.
Well, now we get into the vulnerability again, right? USB does too many things.
Yes, it
does. You thought that USB port was for a storage access.
Yeah.
But built in is this ability to recognize a new device and map it automatically, and keyboard has amazing powers inside of your machine.
That's true. That's true.
So
yes.
All of a sudden you're doing all kinds of crazy things.
Yes, USB, it's, we are so used to USB.
Yes.
Because we put our documents and so on. But to be sincere, the only moment when I'm using the USB is when I'm connecting my drive with the virtual machines.
Right.
Besides that, I'm not using it.
Yes.
And sometimes I'm thinking...
Well, except for initial setup of your machine when you actually did plug your keyboard and your mouse and things in.
At the beginning, yes.
At the beginning. After that, should never change.
Exactly. So why not totally disable the removable storage?
Disable removable storage.
Why not? I mean, I was all the time thinking, like, will people freak out because they don't have the possibility to take the data out from the company? I mean,
right. What?
But when there is no need to take the data out, what about this?
Well, and if there's no policy for taking data out, I'm just thinking, even if you are going to use removable storage, the auto installation part is the problem.
Yeah.
Adding new devices to the machine.
Yeah.
That's an issue.
Yeah, that's right? An issue.
I would think I want to be able to lock it down to a point where only storage is the thing that's allowed to be installed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the only storage that you should have, it's your drive.
Right.
And maybe not even that. Like, use, for example, VDI and so on. So you can have a perfect environment. But of course, it costs money. It needs to be planned. It needs to fit in business and everything. But you can, with the current technology, create the environment that's going to be user-free.
Right.
And the user just sits and does the job, and then that's it.
Yeah.
Data stays in a company. There are no threats. Of course, the user can take pictures. Yes.
Right.
But that's okay. Let's agree to that.
Yeah, let's say we'll tolerate that limit.
Yeah.
Well, I think the VDI model is really interesting there. I'm working
like
with groups of development shops now where all the developers are VDIing in, so the source is never leaving the server.
Exactly.
They're doing development essentially remotely, and all of that is just naturally protected. So they care a lot about the security of their source code.
Yeah.
They're allowing remote developers to work on it. It's just the only thing they can do is take pictures of it.
Exactly.
They can't make a copy of it.
Exactly. And there is a saying that the user is the weakest part of the security chain.
Right.
But it's cliche. No.
Yeah. We're finding all kinds of weaknesses. Like, I really appreciate the conversation we started with here, where we're making the administrator the weakest part of the chain.
Yeah. So he is rather the weakest part of the chain, not the user itself.
Yeah.
Yes.
Go after the more advanced person. But yeah, these default behaviors.
Yes.
About devices that do many different things, like USB ports, they're a real hazard.
Yes.
And it's a lack of creativity on our part to not exploit them so far until stuff like Rubber Ducky comes along.
What about unsigned code?
Yes.
Yeah, this is funny. I mean, to sign a code, it's just like, what, 30 seconds?
Yes.
Exactly.
Nobody does it.
No. And whenever you've got the cool tools from the web pages that are like popular, they're like serious.
Yeah.
You download the tool and it's not digitally signed. No.
Yeah.
And then what do you get? Yes.
Yeah.
And so on. There's like so many things like that going on.
You have no proof that you actually got the code you think you got.
Exactly.
Right? We're back to that same exploit.
Well, you do not have a proof and someone signs it.
Yeah.
Yes, it's the same story, but nobody wants to take their responsibility for being nasty. Yes. Imagine Microsoft putting something like that someone will discover later. It's like, code was signed by Microsoft. Everything is okay.
Yeah.
And then there's this nasty thing going on. Mm.
So now they're liable. Well, I think we've also seen problems with, you know, stuff that's being signed that isn't what you thought it was.
Yes. Yes.
So, yeah.
Stuxnet was a perfect concept here.
Sure.
It was Realtek and Jay Micron who signed the driver.
Yeah.
And I mean, did they really did that? We don't know.
Nobody really knows.
Exactly.
Right. Because those certificates get lost too. Right?
Yes.
The same problem we've had with SSL.
Get lost.
Lost. Quote unquote lost. Yes. This stuff goes missing. So, are you done now, TechEd?
Yes.
Last day.
Now we've got Speaker Ivo waiting. Yes.
Finals.
This
afternoon. So
exactly.
That's going to be exciting. What's next for you?
Next for me is conference or destination.
Either way.
So destination is Sweden. Destination is the Netherlands. Destination is Lebanon, Cyprus, in order.
Right. Just bombing around.
Yes.
Customers, probably, mostly?
Yes. All customers. Okay. Yes. One thing is a conference. In Cyprus, it's going to be conference.
Oh, that's nice.
And then I'm happy because I'm going to fly to Kuwait, which I really love.
Hmm.
And then I'm going to eat some good Singaporean dumplings.
Nice. So, and you're mostly doing pen testing out in the field now?
Well,
security evaluations?
It's actually pretty interesting how it turns in time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's sometimes it's like sometimes within the month it's more within the month it's more pen testing.
Right.
Sometimes it's more training. Sometimes there's like a speaking somewhere.
Yeah.
For example, in June, I'm gonna be like 80% or 90% of pen testing.
Okay.
But for example, May that we've got TechEd conference.
Right.
I will be seeing the customer in Cyprus. There is a conference.
Yeah.
So it's more like speaking, but there is also a pen test that I will do.
Oh,
so
interesting. Yeah, the conference is definitely seasonal, right? The springtime is when we do lots of conferences. I was just, you know, it was Mother's Day this past weekend. I don't think I've been home for Mother's Day in 10 years.
Yeah.
Always somewhere. I always phone my mom.
Exactly.
But, you know, she kind of likes that I phoned her from strange places, although this year I phoned her from Houston.
And last week was amazing, right?
Yeah, the week before I was in Nepal, but yeah, I didn't phone my mom from there.
Yeah, it's like, I'm calling from Nepal. From where? Like, is it like close to my home?
Nope.
Very
I'm
far away.
I'm a whole lot of nowhere. Paul, it's always fun to talk to you.
Definitely, always.
Any websites we can point folks to who want to learn more?
Well, I'm posting the tools always on my webpage. So it's a secure.pl or .us, whichever part of the country or not country you're from.
It's the same website, just a different...
Exactly, just a different domain.
Okay.
And over there is a tile with the name tools.
Yeah.
And I'm posting all of the tools... Instead of course, the evil ones,
right?
On the website,
so you can learn more and have play with it.
Definitely, and I'm always recommending one book,
mm-hmm.
which is The Windows Internals by Mark Rusinovich.
Yes,
and I think it's an amazing book. Like sincerely, amazing.
If you don't have this book, you need this book. You should
you
have
need
this book.
You have to have this book.
Yeah,
exactly.
It is how Windows works.
This is how Windows works, and this is how security works.
Yes,
because security to be good, it must be understood.
Right.
And the book, of course, will give you that.
Paula, thanks for chatting with me.
Thanks so much, Richard.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.